I think somewhere in this first segment, we got the outtake.
I know you can't help yourself. I know that
I fought it so much.
You know what it is? It's like the thing I hate. Like, notice how I said the thing I hate. Like, there's only one thing I hate.
Yeah, only one thing.
One of many things that I hate is whenever you're watching like movie bloopers or that, or like TV ones, and like someone messes up and they go, "Oh, that's going in the outtake reel." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "Yeah, don't say it."
We have our outtake at the beginning. I think it'll be when you say, like, I didn't listen to it.
No, I think this is the outtake.
This could be the outtake.
Hey, buddy, I think we got our outtake.
This is going in the blooper reel.
Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton,
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights. Well, damn.
Well, damn.
Damn. How you doing? You okay? You feel good?
Welcome, everybody. Episode 78, in which we will be discussing D'Angelo's 26-year-old and then maybe some change song, Untitled.
My name is...
I was going to throw you off. You threw me off. Perfect. Perfect. We're back with another Monday episode.
We are, which is just, that's just how we do it now. We record on Mondays. That's our lives.
No. We will be back to Sunday in a week and 6 days.
I would just love for people to go back to this podcast and listen to guess what days we recorded which episodes, because I think it's clear.
I think it's clear too.
I think there's something in our voices that signals when we've hit the later parts of the week that we should never really be recording on.
Oh man, speaking of voices, I'm amazed. Seriously, I'm amazed I have one right now.
Yeah, how you doing?
Oh, fine. A weekend of a lot of singing.
A lot of tracking.
Yes. My band did a, we're coming up on the 15-year anniversary next year, I believe, for the Write a Record Challenge that our buddy Joe Ziegler, a guest on the podcast for years, he started this up. And Colton used to participate. But anyway, my band did.
I was going to post this in the text chain we had going, but I didn't want to be that cheeky. I thought I would save the cheek for you, only you. But cool,
appreciate it.
I did make a stew this weekend.
Hey.
It was a very good stew. So
the make a stew challenge.
That was my, and it was one day. I tried to stick to that, if only that. But yeah, so what was the, we've talked about this on the pod before, and I think if anyone's unfamiliar, you've expanded it, right? Now it's multiple days as opposed to a single day.
I haven't done shit.
You specifically have made these decisions. You are in charge. No, it's Joe Ziegler of Leftmore. It has expanded.
Yeah, it originally was a one-day write and record an album in a day.
Which, for me at least, was really more of like a 6 to 7 hour deal, because that was just however long I was awake.
Yeah, when we did it the first time, I think we did it in about the same time frame, about 6-7 hours. But I'm really happy that he expanded it this time around. We did it over the weekend. So it was basically midnight on Friday till midnight on Sunday. And that was kind of nice. It kind of made it a little easier to where we had a clear path to how we were going to do it, to where, okay, the first day we'll just kind of ease into it. Second day, we're going to record all the music and as much vocals as possible. Third day, mad dash to finish it.
And how do you feel? Like with the problem, not like in the general health sense, but in a like having done it, because I think people, when you, if you hear that, you might be filled with a lot of like anxiety thinking how that could work. I've always really enjoyed
it. It is really fun. I think I'm a seasoned vet when it comes to it, to where I already know what to expect, or I'm like, I'm going to hate it the first listen. Second listen, certain things are going to come a little more easy to me. And then by the third listen, I'm like, yeah, you know what? Screw it. We did that. The funniest thing to me is anybody I tell about it, they're always like, so what do you win at the end? Oh, no. No, there's no reward. The reward is you made something.
And that is, to Joe's credit, I think, more than anything, because I think like I use this model a lot, but like 19 out of 20 people, a bunch of people, 99% who would come up with something like this, it would be for some form of like a competitive deal or monetary deal. And I think if anyone's spoken with Joe Ziegler any bit in their lives, that is just not the kind of person he is.
Yeah, no, art's not a competition. Art is a release.
Also, now, to be fair, and I have never won a battle of the bands in our lives.
We've come close. I've come close twice. But I mean, and to be fair, I absolutely still treat it like a competition. I mean, the first one, I remember listening to your album, listening to Joe's album, and just going, I think ours is better. Oh,
the only true competition is to decide if you're better than your friends.
And exactly.
My guy. Here's what I know for sure, that I think you are a better band member than I am. You are now. I was better than you in the past.
That's
but you're a better band member now, which is I could never dream of doing a write a record challenge with other people. Like that part, I actually find really like impressive.
There came a moment when we were working on this that I almost shot you a text like, this is hard to be in a band. There's so many opinions.
That is where like, it is such a like first decision, best decision kind of deal. Like and that's part of the joy, I think. But for here, someone else's first decision, I feel like my instinct would be, well, okay, let's not go with that. Let's go with that.
That's I completely understand. And just this, you know, I got to say, we did really good with there was no arguing. I think we did this. It was either last year, maybe 2 years ago. And you were like, I want to talk to you about the write a record challenge. And I was like, don't. I don't want to talk about it. There was so much arguing this time around. It was easy breezy. We just kind of flowed with it. We all kind of understood the assignment. I think that was the issue a couple of years ago. We had a member who didn't understand what we were doing. But, it's like, no, like, dude, you record and you just go. It's over.
I was gonna say I don't want to like probe too hard, but like he was unaware of the idea of writing the record in a day, or he was a perfectionist about it, like needed to get it all.
I think it was more that to where he's like, no, I got to redo that drum part, and it's just like, no, it's over, man. Like,
hey, I mean,
on to the next song.
Talk to D'Angelo and Questlove about drum parts. It's just getting into it, man.
Just feel it. I'm looking forward to. I'm really looking forward to discussing this song, and I think inevitably we have to discuss the music video to an extent.
Which is funny, because you've always been the opposite of that. Every time I brought up music videos, you go, I don't watch them. So what is it? Tell me, Rob, pray tell. What is it about this music video you find we have to discuss?
I think we have to discuss it based off of just kind of what it did to D'Angelo, how he feels about it, and the impact, the fact that most people don't really remember how this song goes. They just remember the V.
I agree with everything you said. Like, I think the...
Finally.
Hey, everyone, okay, podcast over. We've done it.
I accomplished my dreams. Episode 78. We're done.
Everything you said, agree. No notes. Okay. Great. Friendship achieved.
Mm-hmm.
No, I am excited as well. I think D'Angelo, like, I'm speaking from experience, having been someone like this, I think he is very misunderstood. And, like, same. And not even, like, in a... like. That video, what it like set him up to be versus what like really his legacy in music should be, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, I've asked actually over the last 2 weeks, I've kind of just posed the question to people like, hey, you remember D'Angelo? Everybody, except for maybe like, I mean, our bass blown compadre Leo,
the enlightened. Knows what. Yeah,
exactly. There's the people who are like, no, dude, I've checked out Voodoo the album. I've checked out Black Messiah. Mm-hmm. He's more than just a naked guy on camera.
Yeah, it is. How would I put it? It's like in such a, I think like what that period of music was for. Mm-hmm. Like it's like peak commercialism in a way that I think even today, like people can't really get their hands on, like just how much like artists were marketed and objectified, like in a way that I feel like today, I think we still consider music to be the machine, and it is, but like what was happening to like major label artists, like the 2000s, and it's like pop stars. It's like Britney Spears. It's that entire like terrible mechanism. That just like turned people out. It's kind of that feels like a recent period. So I think we're inclined to think of it as a more kind of enlightened versus like the 70s, the 80s, whatever. It was, that's why when we talked about like Fiona Apple too, like those kind of artists that go through that machine and come out the other side. What's sad is that D'Angelo almost really didn't.
It's unfortunate, and we'll definitely dive into that a lot further. But you bring up a good the sex sells part of the machine is a really tragic thing that happens to art.
Yeah, you know, and especially for a song that is, I mean, about sex.
But it's like about sex.
But such a different.
It's not the like just like okay cliche raunchy sex. It's like no, this is about real sex.
Yeah, I think we are in for some. We're gonna do it, man. We're gonna get into this.
I'm already getting a little hot and bothered. I'm doing the little fanning my
sweater.
Face.
Yeah. Take off a sweater in this room is insane. I don't know why I did that.
But and did you happen to listen to Beattie?
Yes, I did. I did listen to Beattie.
Yeah, Beattie by Sleuth, everybody. We don't really know what we call this segment, but I'm still just going to call it something new.
You know what? That's a better term. Can we use something new? Can we christen that now?
Yeah, something new.
Like the past couple of, like, and dating back to when we used to do this on the reg, like a while ago, our new music things. Like, I'm like old man on hill waving fists. I don't have any notes, personally.
Notes?
Yeah. Although, and notes, period, to be honest. But
that's fair.
No, this is just the... what was the record I was thinking of, man? I mean, it's just like kind of new age, like Midwest emo that's like just right in the pocket.
Yeah, and it happened to pop up. So I'm bringing up Leo, but Leo does Bedroom Radio. So his schedule is every Monday between, 5 and 8 Pacific Standard Time. He'll do kind of a themed episode, but the first episode of every month is just new music. And so that's when I kind of go into my let me open up Spotify. Here's my new release radar. And Sluice popped up and this song played. And I was like, that was really good. This is not their best song. I went back and listened to their album titled Radial Gate.
Okay.
Really good album. But I was like, I have to go with the newest song by them. So this song, Beattie, is coming up. God, it's saying that it's going to be off of their album Companion, which will be released on March 27th. Mm-hmm. So we got time, everybody. I thought for sure they'd have the album up by now. But
it's got such the that same progression, that chord progression, where it's like the hell of it, and you leave it open. Like, I don't even know what the chord is he's playing, but I know what it looks like on the neck.
Sure, sure. Yeah, it's you lift one finger, and that's the second chord.
Right. It's like Small Town, like the track I played a while ago. No, and the video reminds me a lot of Snow Patrol, which is maybe also what
it is. I saw today when listening to it, I saw on the Spotify, they had like a clip of the video, and I thought the same thing. I was like, oh, this is, what is it called? Run? Is that the Snow?
Now I get all this. It might have been Light Up.
I don't know if we might be talking about the same song. I don't even know what the title exactly is.
We are on it right now.
Yeah, but I do love that song. But I didn't watch the music video for this, but I had the exact same feeling to where I loved this song right away because I was like, oh, this is going to be bare. This is going to be stripped down. But it was the vocals that sold it for me immediately because he starts off doing something that I don't really like in a song where somebody holds out a note a little too long and it almost seems like it's compensating for where lyrics might come in.
Yeah.
But where he does that like, he just does that like, and then hit the next part.
Yeah.
You know, but it all serves a purpose because right when it's like, I used to move every spring and now I don't.
Yeah.
I was like, that's perfect. All right, you led me in. Like, all the vocals had a purpose there. And when he describes the woman's hairstyle, I was just like, I know what her hair looks like. And the way he described it is so unorthodox. And I was like, that's amazing, like, imagery.
And it's very, like, going back to that, the vocal style that you're talking about, it's conversational to the point where I think it's like literal conversation. Like, it sounds like a monologue. And not like lyrics. Like there's not really a rhymes pattern to it. And we were just talking about, and we will, I know, talk about with D'Angelo, like very kind of atypical like vocal deliveries, right? With mm-hmm. like the way we use syllables and we rush things and we don't. I think what's funny is this song, like it's also like another guy that reminds me, it's like MJ Linderman, who I don't know if you listen to a lot of.
I have not. I'll have to check that out.
I mean,
write it down in my notes.
I can't say I'm pro. Like I was going to compare it in a way of saying this to me is the way to do that kind of thing. Like,
okay.
Linderman is more, I mean, the vocals are very similar actually. And he's like, basically think of like a new age Ben Queller, right? Like same kind of lyrics and that same basic idea, but the lyrics never come across as like impressive and as compelling is what's happening here. And it's like you said, it's just attention to detail. It's like, that's the stuff that makes it work.
And I'm not even sure what the song's fully about. The best I can guess is The Wire. when he said, I had to look it up. I was like, who's McNulty and Beattie?
Yeah.
Okay, it's characters from The Wire. But I like that when he talks about that, that's after he talks about how his parents fell in love when they were 17. You know, and so I like the idea that he's almost comparing himself to his parents and going like, and here I am, you know, falling in love with a television show.
Yeah. It's The Wire is very good.
I've heard very good things about it. Which, I'm not a TV show guy.
Comedies. At this point, I just don't think anyone should be. Too much. There's too much. No,
based off of what you said, I'm still watching Twilight Zones. I've just been watching Twilight Zone and Cheers.
Man, and that's I'm ER and I've gone back. Wow. But back when TV was TV, like back when it was, you know, like not trying to be movies. Like
at least nowadays, what you're watching was in your lifetime. I'm watching shit that I wasn't even alive.
But that I mean, this is where like I've thought a lot. Like I listened to our episode we recorded last time, which I thought we did a good job, First Aid Kit. And I was listening back to some of my criticisms on that record. And I think what's hard for me, like in listening, because like there's song, I don't know why I'm still wanting to defend this, but there's still songs in there I think are good. Right. Yeah. And I have sung Emmylou more than once. Not good. And caught myself going, man, why am I still singing Emmylou? Got it. But there is something about lyrics and songs that allow themselves to be impressions and not like carefully curated, like this is the meaning of this song. Like,
yeah.
And that's not to say that no song can be that way and be that direct. It definitely can, but it's refreshing. And I'm going to talk about it with D'Angelo too, where lyrics that allow themselves to be more of setting a vibe, allowing us into like a system of things and not like a direct one-to-one meeting wise. I'll put it this way. It's refreshing because like that's the stuff that I tend to respond to the most lyrically and like thematically. Not to say sometimes I just want a song to be a song, but
amen. I mean, when it hits the bridge on this song, when it hits that like, how do you start a fire in winter? Like that moment, I was nervous because I'm like, this might fall apart. But he had developed a trust. Like while I'm listening to the song, I had developed this trust in this idea that, okay, this sounds bland, but let's see where it goes. And sure as shit, he finds that way to where he says the last syllable right before the drums kick in. And the way that they build upon this and start doing the call and response.
Yeah, to the splinter line.
Yeah. I'm like, that's good songwriting. You know?
And that's honestly, I think about it with movies too, where I'm like, why is it that in certain movies and things and like scripts, I'm more apt to like find like compelling things in different scenes and stuff where you could say like on the surface doesn't really feel like there's a lot going on, but it is, it's trust, right? It's always a trust exercise. And that takes, sometimes it's in the verses, and that's the stuff that bums me out sometimes is when people don't spend enough time like on the verses themselves, unless it's the first verse. Like how many times have you heard a song where the first verse is fire and then every other verse after that
or the chorus doesn't add up to it? There's a song. What is it? Is it Band of Horses?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's where the verse is incredible, but then it hits the chorus and it's just flat. Like all of the inspiration was pushed into the verse and it just doesn't continue throughout the song.
I'll be honest. And I have enjoyed Band of Horses in the past, but you describing that in my head, I'm like, That does not narrow it down for me with Band of Horses. Great verse, flat chorus. Mm.
There's like their big hit.
That, is there a ghost, maybe? I don't know. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I can't remember. Not as important, but
salutes, man. I'm interested. Yeah, I want to hear more. It's
I definitely recommend Radial Gate.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a really good album. It was released 2 years ago or 3 years ago. Oh god, 3 years ago. In 2023.
People get on that.
We just keep moving forward. But yeah, I definitely recommend it, everybody. And I'm looking forward to the new album. They actually just dropped a new single that I'll be listening to right when we get off of this.
There you go, buddy. Yeah. I love it. And we'll put that link in the description. So should we hand it over to the Blamlin?
I think we should.
To prep.
If you're looking for fun events, awesome music, and enjoyable podcasts, then look no further. The Baseball and Entertainment family has you covered. With so many talented people in our community, it was only right that we not only bring you events, but all sorts of awesome entertainment. Follow Baseball on social media or join our Discord community to stay updated and engaged in everything. That is at Baseblown on social media and discord.gg/baseblown for our Discord. Baseball Entertainment, bringing you more than just bass in your face.
Welcome to the Siren Songbook, a podcast where we discuss female artists, their music, their history, and the impact they've made on the music industry. Join us each month as we pick a new inspirational artist and celebrate exactly what it is that makes them so magical.
You can listen to new episodes of the Siren Songbook on Spotify every last Wednesday of the month. The Siren Songbook, a Baseball Entertainment podcast.
Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back, everybody.
I'm very giggly. I don't know what's wrong with me.
That's all right, dude. I've been giddy all weekend. There's just been What are you drinking?
I'm on the LaCroix, man. Tangerine LaCroix.
What's LaCroix?
It's sparkling water. Oh, sparkling nice. Water with little flavor. This is the only. Hey, LaCroix, hit us up.
Yes.
One of many sponsorships.
If you feel like sponsoring us, email us at no.your.writes.podcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. If
one of us is on our game.
You're honestly, I think everyone else has been able to tell the last couple episodes. You're in it, man. And I for whatever reason, I'm so resistant to this podcast sounding good that I'm like, no, get back here.
I need the opposite, you know.
But here's how I feel about it, though. Now, having read all the like kind of liner notes in that to Voodoo, the record that this song mm-hmm. comes from, I'm like, man, all this time, you and I have been kin to D'Angelo and Questlove and J Dilla, like the whole approach of like, what's the story? It was on the Wikipedia for Voodoo I saw where they had a track on Voodoo that they wanted Lenny Kravitz to play to. And he told them, I can't play to this. The drums are off. Like the timing is off. Mm. And they went, that's the point.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Cause I think also fitting within this, like Erykah Badu, like there's this circle of like R&B, but like avant-garde R&B.
Yeah. The Soulquarians, right?
Yeah. The Soulquarians, but like they do R&B and like, not that they're reinventing the wheel, but when we think of R&B in the 2000s, mm-hmm. it's hard not to think about kind of the pop R&B.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of like radio friendly R&B. Like I love Boys to Men. I love, which that's more 90s, but like that kind of seemed to take over to where it's a lot more of a polished sound.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, especially, man, like this record comes out when? 2000.
Yeah.
So this is like, I'm trying to think of what was playing on like BET at the time mm-hmm. in 2000. It's hard. My years are going to be mixed up, but it was very Same. Much the, like you mentioned, like think of everyone of like early 2000s pop producing also. It's all the mm-hmm. same. Like it's, and that can have its own charm. Like I don't want to sure. like start ragging on like.
No. But, this isn't a slide on it. It's just, it's so what the Soulquarian group was doing. Was just kind of like, it was so more artful, so much more like thoughtful.
Yeah. And I mean, the word that I know it's an obvious one, but I feel like it's important to use is like organic, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And it's, there's like a warmth to it that is, I mean, and it's not like there's no programming, right? Or anything. It's like, I know Jay Dilla, I looked around, maybe you can help me out. Did Jay Dilla work on this at all? This whole record? I don't think he did.
I don't know about on the record, but I know not on this song. Okay. This is essentially, oh, I can't remember the other producer's name. He played guitar and bass on this.
I got you. There's actually a great, there's a really handy track listing, I think it is, on, like there's a personnel chart on the Wikipedia for Voodoo that is like such a clutch thing. It's got literally everything for each track, like in a really cool laid out way.
Yes,
Raphael Sadiq is the other producer here. But as far as it says here, all vocals, vocal arrangements, and everything except guitar
and
bass are played by D'Angelo. So Questlove actually didn't play on this record. On this song.
On this song.
Yeah, that's right.
And that says a lot for D'Angelo. Because, I mean, D'Angelo is a multi-instrumentalist. This is, again, kind of the downside of that music video. What it did to a generation of kids growing up that is just like, he's kind of just the naked man on camera.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, no, this is a multi-instrumentalist, really bizarre may not be the right word, but he's really trying to push the envelope with what he's doing. He doesn't want it to just be ordinary R&B. He wants to go into like psychedelic. He wants to go into these aspects of music making.
It's maybe like, as like, I'm thinking of what our audience might be, like what I'm always having to worry, like recognize as a teacher, is that there maybe are people who are listening to this who don't even know what we're talking about. If you have not seen the music video, which is, you know, it's hard to parse it out from the song, even though the song readily stands on its own merits as like the album version. But the video, everyone, if you're unfamiliar, is D'Angelo in a plain black background, not technically nude. He has sweatpants on that are quite low. I think there's quite low. I think that's the academic term one would use.
Yes.
And I think he's on like a kind of revolving deal. And it's
The camera.
Yeah. And you know, there is,
or him, I'm not, I guess.
I don't really feel like going to bat for the video. I think that it's, I was looking up like criticisms and takes on it from the time, and there's a lot of interesting discourse that comes out of it. I can see, and you probably can too, like see like the intent, right? The song is so stripped down. It has an artistic intent to it.
Sure. But and there are some aspects of it to where it can, there is a little bit, the first obvious thing I can think of that made the music video artsy for the time, or faux art, is the idea that there was such a sexualization to women in music videos. He's kind of contradicting and going like, I'll be the sex symbol in this.
Right.
Even though I don't think it was his decision, it does seem like there was more of a creative process, because he had like a trainer.
Right. Like all those dudes in movies where, like, I remember reading this about like Zac Efron, like he didn't know he had to take his shirt off in a movie, and he got really upset because he didn't know he was supposed to. And so he had to like leave the set to like work with the trainer to get pumped. Cause that, newsflash, everybody, people don't normally look that way.
No.
Just like for fun.
Yeah, he's a very handsome man in this music video. But I mean, like, Brad Pitt and Fight Club.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, like, the extensive training. I've heard a lot about dehydration. I hope that didn't have to go into.
Hey, everybody, water up, you know.
Or water. If you want to look good, stop drinking water.
not the official opinion of the Know Your Rights podcast. But no, I mean, that is the thing, right? It is. To me, too, when I read that about the director, it's like it's a male version of what they think the female gaze looks like. Also, like it's like where it's just the male gaze, but onto a dude instead of a woman. Like it's, I know, I honestly, we probably have the same opinion of like, if I could go in a time machine, I would stop this music video from happening, because maybe it changes how many records we got from D'Angelo.
Exactly what I was going to say. D'Angelo would be like, I'm coming with you guys.
Yeah.
We're stopping this from happening. This totally ruined my feeling towards, like, it feels like it ruined his opinion towards an audience.
Yeah.
You know, and you said it to where, like, there is artistic credibility behind this music video. the fact that it is so minimalistic and I mean, I remember, like I said, as a kid, seeing this going like, I'm looking at the screen. I'm looking away from the screen. If I watch this, does this mean I'm blankety blank? You know, all that stupid shit. It really was a challenging video to the status quo of the time. So that's something I give a lot of credit and a lot of merit to it. But it does unfortunately take away from how good a song this is.
And there's two things to that, right? There's the fact that they cut it down, which is, I mean, that's happens all the time, right?
Sure, that makes sense. Yeah.
Radio editing it from 7 to 4 minutes or whatever it is for that thing.
Very few songs get to play Stairway to Heaven, freaking
right. Bohemian
Queen.
Rhapsody.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Yeah. But this is one of those tracks where, and I'm going to try to give a lot of credit whenever I'm quoting from like a music writer, because the thing is, this song specific, I think, created a lot of really cool bits of writing on what it means. But like, there are music critics who have said like, this doesn't really feel like a song. And that's, I think, across Voodoo, where it is, they're so intentional about like really just like this rhythm based like jam sesh for each track. And like, there are definitely bands we've covered that have done something similar, but I would never make the mistake of saying this record then feels improvisational without intent.
Yeah.
There are new things every time I listen to it. I literally just heard something the last time I listened to it from the end piece, a little guitar part I literally never thought of before.
Sure. I mean, there's little like piano flourishes, which apparently that's D'Angelo on. I'm going like, that's gold, man. Like, and this whole song, all of his stuff, it really is kind of like flourishes, but which gives the idea of it was just felt and performed as opposed to there was structure. Because the first time listening to this song this time around, you know, it had been a while, so I was more on the Black Messiah kick.
Yeah.
So like listening to it, I was just like, what's the structure behind this? And like, there is a structure. There is absolutely a verse, chorus, doubling up the chorus, hit the bridge, hit the guitar solos moment, and then the drums kick. We'll get to all this, but I can see the structure, and I originally thought it was all of them in a okay, we got a band.
Right.
Let's perform this. And it's not that way. Like, this is a clearly structured song because it's two guys creating all the music.
And it's, like you said, it's actually in that way somewhat traditional. And yet, like, there are, now I feel like I'm the one getting ahead of myself now, but there are parts like in the bridge around when we get to it, about the 5 minute mark, where every time I kind of lose myself. Like I actually stop, but, and that's not like in a I'm bored way. It's more in a, I'm just in the song. Like you can get lost in it. And I think that's where it's traditional structures, but it's also so groove based that it is, there's like an alluring kind of hypnotism to it.
Sure. And I think the musicians are the two guys are stuck in the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we have a structure, but it's like, we don't have this song won't be played the same twice ever.
I can't imagine. And because I was really trying to get as many listens as I could in of the track. Did you hear any live performances of this?
I didn't, and I should have. It would have been intriguing to see.
I mean, there are definitely parts that, like, I think we might have the same piano flourish, because I got excited when I heard it, and I was like, I've never heard that before. But I wouldn't be surprised if there are some of those things get replicated, but I don't know, like the bass run in the final chorus too, like little things or like, those are like highlights I'm looking for. But at the same time, everything between that, I would almost not want to hear the same one, but I guarantee, I mean, the sad thing is I never get to hear that again. Like D'Angelo, in case anyone that's unfamiliar, passed away in 2025, which is awful. And Rob has frozen. He frozen. Oh no, can you hear me? Uh-oh, buddy.
All right, so the song starts off with a doom clap, and then we go.
How does it feel? How does it feel?
Really good song. All right, we're done. Again. All right, everybody, I'm having some outage problems here, so we're going to try to see if we can push through. If we can't, we'll...
I mean, you, really, for all you people out there, you hopefully won't even tell the difference.
No.
This could be today. It could be another day. We don't know.
Yeah.
What's happening?
This is not our first time dealing with some BS like this.
Either it's a fire, either it's a blackout, whatever it's been. Usually it's on my side of things. So I'm actually a little like, I'm like, eh, it doesn't matter. Because I'm usually one relieved. Undergoing some weird natural disaster.
Yeah.
Let's get to the opening. We've talked enough. Yep. I was getting into right when you blacked out, and it's actually recorded, so I think we're fine. But yeah. I was just reminding people that we're never going to get to see another live performance of this song, which yes. is the tragedy. And your face froze in the like best scowl that you've ever done. And I was like, was I not supposed to tell people?
I was literally about to say, yes, we have to remember. Unfortunately, we lost D'Angelo a few months ago.
Yeah. And Angie Stone, right? His partner, former partner, I think at the time. But man, that's sad. So on that note, boom. Like, it's, I know it's not programmed, but the production on the song as a whole, I am like in love with.
Yeah.
It is so understated. No one instrument is up, not even his vocals. Like, I think nothing is like in control. Like, for the most part, everything is so evenly mixed. And it's such a, in this song especially though, it works so perfectly. I think that's the guitar, just tonally. Comes out the most, but
oh, the guitar. Well, that click, that rim shot.
That's yeah.
Oh, it just, and I mean, it obviously it starts with like kind of like the flummox to kick it off, which I love that they kept that in there. Again, it's the organic nature of it all. Just when it kicks in, it's like yeah, like I'm already feeling the vibes. Guitar's playing that, you know, basically the vocal melody, the chorus hook, and it's an immediate like oh. Okay, let me like kind of sit down. Let me like melt into this because this song is purely every instrument kind of finds its spot, kind of fall back into the mix, find your spot, fall back into the mix, and just hitting the first what's the first lyric? Because that was your hint for
girl, it's all on you. Yeah,
and then I kind of don't care about the lyrics after this.
I think. Mm-hmm. These are lyrics that are, and really across, I think, a lot of his records, right? The lyrics are easy to, like, I'll put it this way. I feel like they're lyrics you can engage with or not. But, and like, we've, oh no. Yep, we're done. Ah, shit. Hello?
What's sad is you're back, but I don't trust this. I literally have a warning right now saying your internet connection is unstable.
Oh, shit.
We'll see you Wednesday. Fuck.
Hello?
Okay, cool. Yeah. Hey, man. Yeah. Just talked to my mom, and her boyfriend lives right down the street, and he's getting pissed off with Spectrum.
So it's like neighborhood wide.
Oh, yeah. No, it's an outage in the area.
All right. So,
let the listeners know. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know we're good. I mean, this is also going to be weird because we can't see each other. It's actually very much of a throwback to why we started this podcast in the first place.
Yeah, everybody's getting the origins of this podcast right here.
just phone calls. It would have to be like 2 o'clock in the morning. So yeah. We've had some internet issues. Do you want to? I'll give you a soapbox here, Rob. Do you want to voice any opinions right now?
Spectrum, figure shit out. The Spectrum, fuck.
You heard it, Spectrum. Come on, man. This is
a month and a half of problems. For as bad as the 20s have been, apparently 2026, it's going to be my internet.
We have been trying to just bring good music discussion to the people, and these guys are in the way. But here's the thing. We have overcome. We are ready. We have quality audio be damned. We are going to finish this D'Angelo episode because D'Angelo would have wanted us to.
That's right. That's right. Know your rights finds a way.
And I don't think he would really have an opinion either way. So that's okay. I don't want to put that on him. I'm so sorry. Rest in peace.
Yeah. There's a small part of me going like, man, he really didn't like this song or didn't like what this song did to his legacy. I'm going to find a way to stop it.
So we are going to get this figured out. And to be honest, it's not either of our faults. It's something beyond us, but we will somehow stuff will work. But we are back into discussion. I especially don't remember where we were, but I want to just, here's the thing. I know we've talked about this opening. We've talked about the kind of purposeful way that the song is somewhat off kilter. I want to make this case. I know it's on record from the previous episode. What I love about, I figured out 6-8. I have never been able to explain and I've gotten confused in the past with 6-8 versus 3/4. Like, if you're unfamiliar, everybody, we're talking about time signatures, right? The rhythm of the song. I've never been good at figuring that out or explaining it. But I found a site, and I had the guy, and now I don't have it anymore. I feel terrible. This is a YouTuber who does a lot of different like music theory videos. Dave something, and I really apologize. I can't remember his name. But the way Thank he explained you, the difference between the... Yeah, seriously. The way he explained it was, if you're familiar with America from West Side Story, the da-da-da-da-da-da America. It actually has both 6-8s and 3/4s. So... that's 6/8. 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. And that last one, the America, is 3/4. And it has more of that like waltz kind of swing feeling versus the it's supposed to be kind of like a pendulum going back and forth for 6/8. It's that 1-2 kind of feeling. And I don't know, that's something that I appreciate about the song. It has that rhythm, that really kind of swaying rhythm. But it's just back and forth. It's like, not to get too physical here, but it's like a pair of hips just swaying back and forth. Hey,
what better song for for that type of statement?
It most certainly is. But so there's something about the song that also to me is like educational. Like, I learn a lot about music from just diving into all the little things that went into it. But
the subtleties behind this song are incredible. Because I mean, like, yes, we get the 6-8 from what's really a very uncomplicated drum beat that goes throughout the entire song. We get that, we get this, you know, the rim shot, and the hi-hat is very steady, just...
Right.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and just like a little bit of like that kind of, that da-doo, you know, just to kind of lead into it. But that just continues throughout the song, where it's like, yes, it is 6-8, but I don't care. I can do a waltz dance to this song.
And yeah. If you're going to claim something else, I would be more prone to agree with you, because you've always been better that night. It's funny, like drumming, I never really interested myself much in the theory side of things. As I get older and I don't currently have a set of drums to play with anymore, I'm way more invested in it. It's just how it goes.
But I think that comes with all the territory, that this song, again, this song being that educational, like for me, chord progression all of a sudden finds like a new light. Because, you know, like this is in D mixodolian. So for all intents and purposes, I'm going to say it's in D major, you know, like with chords that don't necessarily completely fit within the D major scale, because it's really a D major that goes to this A minor. I think they called it an A minor 9. Like, screw that. I've played that chord. But really what changes it from your typical D major scale is in D major, the A would be a major. So I'm like, okay, you shift it to a minor. Then you hit this unbelievable G major 7, which is in the scale of D major. Mm-hmm. The coolest thing about this song is that fourth chord, it could either be a C major 7, or it could be a G minor. I've played along with this track, just playing the chords. I mean, the song has such like flurries of instrumentation that there's really not like a... There's no steady chords being played. It's the entire group working as one chord progression.
Right.
But the G minor works, and the C major 7, or the C 7 works. You know, which is just unbelievable to think about. So now when I play it by myself, I'm playing a G minor at 11. Which for the listener, this might be a little confusing. But it's utilizing... it's utilizing the C within playing the G minor, and it's just all three chords sound completely right.
I think I can put it in ways that like maybe an average listener can understand, because it's coming from a very average musical theorist, meaning not one at all. I think if you're listening to a song like this, everyone, like when we're describing these chords, like there are kind of typical like major chords that like your typical like folk guy, whatever, anyone playing like an acoustic guitar, if you hear a D, there's a kind of open jingliness to it that like you're not hearing here. And that's also because it's all these other instruments. But when you get these more kind of like complex chords, there's, and they don't always work, right? There are people who use them in ways that I think are like deer hunter.
Like, that doesn't impress me much.
And it's thrown in a way that is kind of purposefully wanting it to feel complex and interesting versus like something that's just so naturally rich. I think that's the word I would use, is rich. Is it's not like, you know, the rhythm of the song, and like you, Rob mentioned, like the drumming of it also, like nothing is, I would say, playing wise done in this purposefully really like maestro kind of fashion. But the like, there's a richness to the complexity of the chords, as basic as the progression can feel. That's it gives what should be a kind of core organic sounding song, and it is, it just gives it some, you find something every time. Like just today I listened to it again, like right before we went to do this, because I was afraid everything was gonna lose me. And there's already stuff, like I know we're not there yet, there's a part in the final bit, a bass line, that I want to call out when we get to that final chorus. You know what's
I think we're on the same page. It's right after he does the first big Prince scream, and he does a, like, for me, it's that like kind of palm muted bass thing, like I don't even know, muted bass thing I should say.
Yeah, that's it. And honestly, at this point, I'm like, you know what, we're in it anyway. Wherever the hell we want to go. But
yeah, this is somewhat a disaster of an episode, but we're salvaging, guys.
I feel renewed just by talking, just the little bits we've already talked about. So I know we did not yet get into the lyrics, and that's funny because like I think we're still kind of on the first verse-ish. we're in the arena.
We've established the science behind the song, and now we dive into how it really kicks off.
I think that's fair. I think there are two very like understandable reactions. Actually, there's one I think is probably the most understandable, which is, I can't understand a single thing that he is saying. I know his voice is great, and that's all okay. And
yeah, I think because this song was supposed to be kind of like a Prince tribute. I believe that was the original goal behind this. I'm sorry if everybody hears doors opening in the background, but I'm just pacing. I'm still upset.
But, You're good.
But like, it was supposed to be this like Prince tribute. So of course there's going to be like a hyper-sexual vibe to it. But the lyrics kind of, they don't have to be perfect because of that. And they can kind of just be, I mean, I don't know about you. Do you think he wrote out lyrics?
I do. And in fact, that's already something I want to gently push back on, which is, and I think the initial understanding I can see is, like you mentioned, this feels like riffing, and there's a lot of girls there's, in which I know you have not in the past been a fan of, like girl or baby or
not my favorite words to utilize in a song,
but
darling,
well, none of those, thank God. But I find these lyrics, much like the music backing it, I find them rich in meaning, and like I think these lyrics are great. Like I hate to sound like I just keep repeating myself, but there's something to be said about when you're writing lyrically to any kind of music, and I think in this case it really is a example of like writing to music, right? Like I doubt that he had these lyrics cooking and like needed to put them to something. Like, yeah, I'd love to know how this started. If it was a melody.
Yeah, I doubt chords. He wasn't having that like 8 Mile on the bus, you know, Eminem writing out lyrics. Like, I don't think he was plucking from that.
Right. And actually, I think I'll go one step further. I almost would guarantee these came from the chords and not even a melody, because the melody is there, but it's also not. Like, there's the kind of major, like, that's possible. But when I get into, in the first verse, I don't think is the best example of it, but clearly we all know what this song is about. Like, I don't think, but I think to me, it's the complexity in which it is about sex. Like, it is not just like a kind of brainless, like, okay, I gotta call this out. Do you remember Boom Boom Boom, Let Me Hear You Say Wayo?
Wayo.
Like, yeah. But my wife and I were watching the Dodger game earlier today, and they, you know, that's like every stadium and arena, right? Boom boom boom, and then the crowd goes wayo wayo. The lyrics that song, have you looked up the lyrics of that song?
No, of course not.
It is actually filthy. Like, when I say pornographic, I'm not like Nancy Reagan clutching her pearls at, like, you know, some
or, absolutely.
It is like unbelievably filthy. And that's a song where when I read it, like the lyrics and that, I'm like, I get it. Like, if anyone's unfamiliar, if you go back to like old like rhythm and blues singers and jazz singers, like, some of those lyrics are filthy. Like, in a way that is like unabashedly sexual. Oh yeah, like unabashedly sexual in ways that aren't like, oh, for the time sexual, like, would make you blush today. No one would ever think putting that on tape.
Some vulgarity.
And I would say that for this song, though, I think all that compared, it is clearly like, and D'Angelo has done this in other songs too, he is graphic when he wants to be, but I don't know if you agree. There's like an intimacy about this, though, and like a whole, like, it is all about her, right? In the song, like, everything, like, pleasure, everything is all directed at her. That there's also this really kind of like touching in a emotional sense.
Absolutely. Within the first verse, like, I mean, we can say this entire song is about sensuality, but there's also consensuality to this song. Like, in that first verse, he's kind of going like, if you want, you know, like, he's got a lot of that kind of like,
yeah, you have it your way, you can decide.
Yeah,
it is so easy, and especially at the time that he is recording. And by the way, I was fully inundated into the, like, the misogyny of the time. Like, I wasn't at the time like, oh, thank God, this D'Angelo song. It's just looking back at it now, you're like, wow, like, this is far different from any other song you were listening to at the time.
Sure, definitely. Is again kind of like, we got to blame the video for what it did to the legacy of the song.
I would agree, yeah. And it's funny, the more we think about it, and the more I get distanced from our, I thought we had a great conversation about that on this same episode, but a week ago.
Probably came in a lot clearer, yeah.
In a visual medium, but no, it's for a song that is ostensibly about just the one thing, it does so in such an emotionally complex and rich way to me. And also, it is not just about sex. Like, there's going to be lyrics later on where it's also just about, like, giving into, like, desire, and not necessarily a sexual way, but also, like, in, like, when he says, like, I want to, like, bring the, or no, what is it? I want to take the walls down with you. And that's in the bridge,
yeah,
a long ways away.
Yeah.
But that's a beautiful, that's my favorite lyric, because that's one of those, when he says, I wish you'd open up, because I want to take the walls down. Like, clearly, open up is, like, you know, legs, the duh. But it's, honestly, it's also very easily just about, like, being open with someone. I don't know, that stuff seems simple, but that's where I would bet there's a notebook that he had that has these things. And I think there's like a double entendre. The double entendre is more about the emotional sense of it. The surface level is only about the sex, and the secondary meaning is all about this interplay between the two. So I could kind of leave at least the verse and bridge lyrics at that discussion, but I think these lyrics are fantastic. I would, if we're going to do an overrated, underrated are the lyrics. Other than the chorus is, you know, the most like recognizable thing, I guess.
You're not wrong. I still find the lyrics to be kind of moot is not the right word, but kind of like secondary towards like the vocal melody plays a bigger role anyway. Like he's having a lot more fun with how he's piecing these lyrics together within his melodic play with it and his very well ranged voice.
And don't you think a lot of that though is in the mixing? Like I know we talked about that before, but the mixing, everything is low. Like the only like, obviously like in the chorus, because I think the way the vocal arrangements are set up, they get louder in the mix, but in the verses, it's that, like, I think it's a double tracked falsetto. But it's quite low.
Yeah.
And so it is like the song itself is kind of underplaying the lyrics. I mean, they're there, but it's also in the delivery. What do you think of, only because I know we were just talking about First Aid Kit, and one of us, I don't remember which one, had a problem with the way that they, who could say who it was?
Yeah. One of email us.
Yeah, please at no.your.writes.podcast@gmail.com.
That's right.
But one of us took issue with the way they were performing syllable by syllable the lines they had. And this is, I think, an example of the opposite. Like, the delivery is so syncopated. You could not read these lyrics and try to sing along with them. It's almost impossible because the delivery is so unique every time.
And then you nailed it. It's the every time to where it's, I think I said this previously, to where this song won't be performed the same twice ever, including vocals, you know, but there's just this kind of like in the heat of the moment. And that's what gives the lyrics that much more of the passion, to where he's performing it as it's happening. He's filling it with the music and it adds to the sexuality of the lyrics without it becoming, you know, grotesque.
You know, and I think that's a great way to put it. And it's the chorus. I find it both is interesting. I think one of us again. I like this new version of just saying one of us has had opinions, and I'm not going to tell people who has had it. One of us has taken issue with someone just repeating one line for the chorus over and over again. Would that person like to speak to the chorus of this song?
Honestly, I find the chorus to be the anchor of the song. And while I do take a little bit of qualm to it, I think that it accents the lyrics in a very peculiar way. Because, like, as much as we say, you know, this song is very hypersexualized, like, the how does it feel is so, it can come across as, you know, raunchy. Like, yeah, how does that feel, girl? Or it can come across as, you know, like, how does this feel? Like, how are you feeling right now?
Yeah, like, caring. Like, again, I think you're right. It speaks to how kind of, like emotionally deep the song can feel. And, like, I mean that in, like, literally, like, how he feels about this person, right? Like, it is all about caring, intimacy, right? But like at the same time, it's also, I don't know, are we ready to say, is this the best song with the chorus that says how does it feel? We've done two now. We've done two songs with the same chorus.
This one probably wins. Granted, we've listened to it a lot more than we anticipated. But
I think Bob Dylan might have something to say about it, but you know what, Bob? I think this song is better than like a Rolling Stone.
I agree. But I mean, like, regardless, there's kind of the nuance to what does how does it feel mean. And to go back to what you were asking me, the repetition of the chorus, I think, is needed because the verse is so unrepetitive.
You know, I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, man, I miss your face.
You know, I kind of would like to be staring at you, but again, this is old school. I want
direct eye contact while we talk about this song and just look at each other's eyes. No, I agree with that. And I think the way it's, of course, how his like kind of primary vocals are playing out, but it's also, and this is, I think, the song's true achievement. Like my vote for like secret sauce of this song is all the vocal arrangements that D'Angelo puts up, like all the tracking and all, like, it's funny, like someone who I actually think I've heard similar things to is like Isaac Brock of Modest Mouse, someone we just got finished talking about, I feel like.
Yeah,
but yeah it's so creative in how he is like setting up these arrangements and like the kind of backing vocals he puts into the chorus. That's what makes each chorus feel different to me too, is like all the little like, wanna know how it feels, yeah. Like that's almost never the same.
Yeah, well, and that's always going to be like kind of a, like there's a rocket science to this, to where like you gotta be versed in kind of doing that, the overdub of the vocals, which clearly D'Angelo is in on, you know, because he has those kind of like, it's the overdub lead vocals where it's like, yeah, we got How Does It Feel to kind of be the center of this song, but he's gonna add some.
Oh yeah, he did all the vocal tracks and he did all the arrangements, mm-hmm. and it's masterful. Like I really, to me, that's the part of the song that I'm always kind of blown away by. It's, I mean, there's a lot to be impressed by, but it's how, like, again, every time I listen, there's another one of those little backing vocal things in the back that I hear that I hadn't heard before. And it's either in like performance or it's in like, I mean, my favorite one is the, what is it? I think it's in the final chorus when he goes, I want to take you back home or something. Like they get more random where I'm like, what?
This is where I'm like, I'm certain he's riffing. He's just like, give me one more. Hit record. I'm just going to kind of like, I'm going to doll it up. And I mean, like, that's when he starts hitting the real Prince, like the Prince scream, you know, that like kind of falsetto, adding a little bit of like tension at the bottom of your throat. Yeah.
Oh man. Yo, the yazz are, yeah, they're
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, you're talking about what you think the secret sauce is to me. To me, the secret sauce is the relationship between the guitar, the bass, and the piano.
I'm in on that. I'm in.
Yeah. That's where you get the... To me, I think that's actually what sexualizes it more. What makes it such a, like, early 2000s makeout song. You know, it's just like, it's breathing so much, and each person just... Well, and when we say each person, it's just the two guys, but I mean...
No, I want to make sure we get the names. I think we might have mentioned before. So Rafael Sadiq, who's the other producer, is on bass, and it sounds like he did track some guitar. But Edward Alford also did guitar, and I don't know who did which, and I'm guessing we'll never know.
why would we? I mean, the again, I don't think they wrote it. I think they just had like music theory understanding.
I think that's true. I was gonna ask you, because I feel like we're kind of organically at the what amounts to the bridge, right? Which I think, first of all, I want to call out that little line, like do 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 do.
Yeah. So I think it resolves on a B minor. I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's like the one switch up to the chord progression I think that the song has. Right, and it's that one little thing before you get into the guitar solo.
There might be some subtle shifts during the verse and the chorus, but essentially it's the same chord progression. And yeah, at this point, we're actually running into a sincere chord change. Mm-hmm.
And I love that line. I love the do 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 do.
It's the so sexy smart. Sabbath of it all. Of course, yeah. Man. Like
it's so good.
Like that, it's something that I love. That growing up playing guitar, you know, I always felt like as a song ascended, that's what you do on the guitar neck. So I love when people go back on the guitar neck, go to the lower range to kind of add this new bigness to it, and that's exactly what this accomplishes.
And it's so great because it makes that bridge now feel like it's in this more kind of like primal space. And then it leaves it open for the rest of that, like the solo slash like going into the little like vocal arrangement that helps build up to the final chorus, like it gives that room to build. Like it's almost like it brings it back down again so we can get to this way higher. I'm just talking like emotionally heightened, but I think also kind of just the way the song's melody and everything is progressing. It like, I feel like there's, it's easy to hear us talk about this and just be like, what are they talking about? Like, this is just a song you can just kind of like lose yourself in. Yeah. And, but it's all in, I think it's also listening to it like five times and not getting sick of it five times in a row.
Well, I mean, that's what this song does anyway. You nailed it to where you can listen to it 100 times. You're probably going to hear something that you didn't really hear the first time. We talked about like little piano flourishes.
Yeah, going like, into the choruses and like that little like almost like a kind of like lyrical bridge that he does, right? Where's like, girl, already got me, might really want me, I just want to be your man. And it does. It always goes to like, and it's all, it's so buried that it's not meant to be something that you just catch right away. And it's funny because even the guitar solo, it's
very vague. It's hard to call it a guitar solo. I mean, it's essentially, you know, taking the place of the chorus that you were anticipating at that moment, you know? And Jordan's like, oh, okay, we're not going into How Does It Feel. We're going to kind of expand this a little bit further. And again, the guitar is not the dominant thing. It's still like everybody's, it's this pick and choose, this like balance of like, okay, I got this spot, then you get the next spot. Incredible musicianship going on there, because one of the hardest things to teach somebody is to shut up. You know,
and this is not, and this is more for my own, like I need to reemphasize this to myself. This is not like five guys who have played with each other for a long time, all playing together in a studio and giving nods to each other on this stuff. This is, I think, three guys max tracking. And as like they are tracking like that kind of discipline, where if you're like alone, like in a booth with a guitar, like I feel like you're more apt to, like Shredder Colton talking here, by the way, you're more apt to go hog wild versus like when you're like jamming with people and you're kind of all feeding off of each other's energy. Like that's the thing I think is so cool, is this feels like you've been mentioning, like such a kind of like they are all synthesized, right? And yet, and like all this energy, and yet it's like I would love to just know how many tracks, how long. Like I want to sit in to see how this came together.
I would imagine they got to be hitting, like, especially due to D'Angelo's vocals. There's got to be a lot of different tracks stacked on top of this. And I mean, like, I can't help but think that even with some of the guitar, like, while this song sounds so organic and it feels like a group of people in a room playing this, as we've pointed out, that's not the case, but they were able to capture it. So I wonder how many times they had to, like, you know, go like, hey, take another take on that one. You kind of played over blankety blank. Like, you know, just like make sure that this song continues this vibe of organic feel, which unfortunately it's not entirely organic, but hell, they capture that. I mean, even when they drop out, like when you think it's going to be the chorus, it's kind of the guitar solo, and then it just drops out into the bass and the drums. Unbelievable breath of fresh air in that. Like, literally, that's what that moment's for. To me, that's them having a cigarette after hooking up. I don't know.
And that is, like, I actually got the timestamp for that, because every time I listen to this song, had a little phone buzz there. That'll be fun for everything. Every time I listen to this song, around 5 minutes, it's always the same. Around 5 minutes is where I feel like I'm, in the good way, I've woken up from a trance. Like, it's like after the guitar solo, and it's like around the 5 minute mark is where, like you mentioned, it's really everything drops out except drums and bass, and it all starts to kick up again. And it does. It doesn't, it's not there for you know, I'm thinking of like your typical pop punk song where it'll like only kick into like the bass and it's like the typical bridge, like things drop out before you get into the chorus and it breathes for like a minute.
It gives it that well-deserved space, you know, and just we've talked about this in previous songs. I can't remember which ones in particular, but this is kind of a moment of soaking in everything. I think we talked about it with Brother's Blood, you know, to where it's like such a long intro for that Kevin Devine song. And it's kind of anticipating like how emotional this shit's going to get. This is kind of the reverse of that, to where we're running into this like, okay, well, hold on a second. Like, give me a moment to kind of digest everything that's occurred. You know, all these different times that a butterfly flew and then landed in the song and then flew and then landed in the song. Like so many things have happened.
All the wing flaps, right?
Yeah.
And it is, and not to like, this is such a like, you know, old guy in a record store opinion, but I think it's another good reminder that listening to the album version of this song, like only having listened to the radio edit is like malpractice, like to yourself.
Yeah, I agree.
Like,
well, because more than likely, if you listen to the radio edit, that means you just watch the video to where it's like somebody, whoever has only watched the video, please turn the video off and listen to this beautiful song.
And it's also like the radio edit is like a healthy like 4.5 minutes. Like it's about as long, I think, as a song on the radio can be nowadays. And it feels so abrupt. Like it's and it's because you don't have what could feel superfluous, right? That whole dropout and then the build into the chorus again. That might be my favorite part. Like the build
it
into the chorus.
It is my favorite. Yeah. When it hits that little like. That little, just like that little, the vocals are really telling us, okay, we're coming back and just.
How does it feel?
I was like, yeah, dude, this is now a hook to me. Like, at the beginning of the song, How Does It Feel is not like that spectacular a hook.
It's more of a refrain, right? It's more of.
Yeah.
Like, it actually feels very, like, almost like a very, like, folk-based, right? Where it's like, that's the round that you sing going from the verses into it. And it's, like you mentioned, I think it's so much more about what the guitar is doing and the piano. The da-da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the vocals feel kind of extra, but in the final chorus, it's like, you can't deny that vocal performance. Like, it's so... powerful, man.
It's unbelievable, especially because I'm like, it's all D'Angelo.
Yeah.
All of these voices, and like, it's not just harmony. Like, there are moments to where one of the backing voices has this different little melody, and he finds a way to accent it just right on a different overdub. And I'm like, this is like, it's special. And it's, to me, it's really in the moment. I don't know for sure, but again, I think it's just him kind of vibing with the song.
I want to clarify something I said earlier when I was bringing up like Isaac Brock. I think because you and I are far more fluent in the kind of like alternative / like indie world, whatever you want to call it, punk rock, whatever. And we both know of people who track vocals that are kind of like purposefully. Like very unique and original, creative, but also they're not trying to be kind of scientifically perfect with the harmonies they have and even the timing of it, where it's more about the way these different vocal performances are kind of bouncing off each other. And it's funny, the other band I was thinking of is Brand New, where I think the way they track vocals is really interesting. And it's how Jesse Lacey and who is it, Vince?
The other guitars,
how their performances play off of each other. Like, I feel like in the rock world that gets more credit, but like I think again, knowing what went into the like the philosophy behind this album and this track, like wanting that organic thing, like the tracking isn't perfect, like the timing of it, there's little blips and like little flams, right? that you can hear, but that's also what pays off so well in that final chorus. And like you've called it a number of times, like the kind of Prince falsetto. I want to say something. I think we're both on record of, I don't dislike Prince whatsoever, but I find his discography overall to be overrated. And him, of course, My Guitar Gently Weeps, like that solo is what it is. It's very
good. But I mean, that's part of an unbelievable history anyway. But yes, he dominates that live performance of While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
And like, there's always the story of, like most people who are like really into the musical behind, you know, whatever, or know about the story. But I think Rolling Stone had just put out a list of 100 greatest guitarists, and Prince, I don't think, was on it, or he was like in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
And that was right before he did this performance. And so he just, like, there's like a lot of like Michael Jordan meme. I took that personally.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, because it took me years into me playing guitar to find out. Just somebody told me, like, oh, no, Prince is an unbelievable guitarist. And I'm like, I get it. He's a good guitarist. And they're like, no, stop. Please dive into this. That dude is he's D'Angelo Prince. There is a similar thing to where it's like very good multi-instrumentalist. I'm going to give Prince the edge on guitar. You know, especially based off of this song. But I mean,
so, and that's what I was going to kind of get into is, I think knowing the D'Angelo that I'm familiar with, and like the songwriting, like the records that I have, and really Voodoo, Black Messiah, and parts of Brown Sugar. Like I am not like dyed in the wool, heard everything he's ever tracked, but something I appreciate about D'Angelo is Prince to me is way more like an athlete in terms of just like how good of a musician he is and how like the vocals, everything. I don't think I've ever really caught on to the quote unquote artistry of Prince. And I think that solo is kind of representative of that. It's that more like bombastic, like, I don't know. There's just something.
I think you nailed it there. Yeah. There's like Prince is, most of Prince's career has been like living up to his last thing. Whereas D'Angelo has like a lot more of the leisure of just like, I get to kind of come in here. I got a record deal and I can release stuff, but he's not trying to match the theatrics from last time.
No. And that's the thing. Prince is like unparalleled as a performer, but this song I think is a good like example of nothing about this song, other than you could argue the final chorus and that lyrical run he does, or the vocal run, but it's not bombastic. And you've done a great job of talking to us about how the instruments play off of that. Like, no one is trying to overshadow anybody else. And because of that, everybody benefits, the listener most of all. Like,
except for the very ending, because we're coming off of this great moment of just the where I'm like, oh my god, it's so huge. And then I believe you brought up The Sopranos, the final episode.
Yeah, the cut to black.
Yeah, so it just stops, and I'm like, I have my my theories on why that occurred.
So okay, I teased this when we first introduced the song. And much like The Sopranos, much like that ending, my initial thought was, I hate it. Why? Why is this happening?
Yep.
And my second thought is, like, I don't think they could have ended any other way. Like, I love the ending of this song. I actually think thematically to what the song is doing, it's kind of perfect. But I want to hear your take first.
Well, it's interesting you say thematically, because to me, if I think thematically, that's him like losing complete interest in this moment. And it's like, okay, I have reached my climax.
How does it feel? Oh, I love you. Everything's great. I just wanted to make, okay. Oh, what's going on over there? What's going on?
I'm done. I reached the finish. Now I'm not as interested.
Oh, is it 7:10? Dodgers are on? All right, let's go.
My theory is that probably after that, the jam kind of fizzled out. Like they were like, hey, let's do a fade out. It feels like a song that should just fade out, right?
So I that was going to be my follow-up to you. If we're not sold on, and maybe to make it clear, if you have not heard this song, it's just cuts out, like literally
got halfway through fill.
Yeah.
How does it?
So
the song's over.
I was gonna ask. So how would you think to end it? And you think it would just naturally? I could see what you're saying, like to fade out probably makes the most sense.
Yeah.
It's
really hard
see...
with a.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, with a song like this, it's really hard to find the perfect finality to it. Like, it's so jammy, it's so vibey, and as somebody who's part of a band where we write tons of jammy songs, to where it literally is just a jam, and we'll figure it out as it's coming to a close. Most of the time, the solution is fade out. Every now and then there's that lucky, okay, cool, we found the perfect, we all end on the crash cymbal, you know, just, okay, it's over. Mm-hmm. Most of the time that doesn't happen. And it feels like the way this song is structured, while it does have a lot of structure to it, towards the end I wouldn't be surprised if they were just kind of like, eh, we'll figure it out. And the best solution was...
And to be clear, because I listen, like, if you're listening to the album, it's, you could argue that it's like, well, if the next album, the next track just kind of perfectly plays off of that, but it doesn't. Like, it actually,
it doesn't.
It does not,
I completely agree.
And by the way, everybody, Africa is a fire song. That song is so good.
Yeah, but I mean, that entire album is, but the entire purpose of the album, which I, what I think makes the ending of this song so impactful, is. D'Angelo's not interested in doing Orthodox.
Yeah.
You know, like, he probably was just like, that's great. And everybody's like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, fuck yeah.
Yes. I see what you're saying. And I do think initially I was, because the song feels so like, just like minutely composed, right? But also, of course, having this really free-flowing, organic atmosphere that, it's like, you know, the kind of atmosphere that feels so like open, and yet you know it took so much work to do that. The reason I love the closing so much is we are at what is like the high watermark of this song. If you're going off of like intensity, the way the vocals work, the way all this work that the instruments have been doing this whole track to build this synergy. It has reached its peak. And like going with the lyrics, right? This is the height of passion. And I'm going to just, you know, watch my words here because I have family that listen to this.
Let it fly. Let it fly, Colton.
This is the height of everything. And if the song is all about like pleasure, right? And intimacy and wanting your partner to just like be in this world with you, like where else to go? Like if like anything after that point is a letdown. And that's maybe the point, is to end it at the absolute peak. And the song ends at, ostensibly, the idea is that it continues. You know what I mean? Like that we don't see the other side of that high mark is the idea that it never ends, right? And or that it's no point. That was the whole goal of the song, was to get to that moment. Like that's what I think is so cool about it. And it's, I think the radio edit, what is it? Doesn't the radio edit fade out?
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not completely sure, but it makes a lot of sense given the fact that on the album version, this is already running pretty long.
Right, right. And if we were recording any other way, I would check, but I don't want to do that to us. But
yes.
So that's, to me, I was prepared to say that's the thing I think is like the one falter, but I actually don't think so. I think the way it ends is kind of perfect. And it, like you mentioned, it's of course right up D'Angelo's alley to zig where everybody else zags, but I don't know, like that's the kind of stuff that I like. Other songs have done that, but I think you have to make this argument, at least like they earn that kind of an ending. It's not just to kind of, you know, fly in the face.
That's what we talked about when we talked about Beatty. There's like kind of earning the trust within it, to where like when this song ends, it's just like, all right, I'm not going to hold a grudge against that, but it's still kind of, it kind of irritates me, but I guess to kind of put a light on this,
default American does this all the time, to where we like to write shorter songs so you want to come back and listen to it again, to where this song cuts off so abruptly that it's just like, oh shit, all right, let me replay this. Like, that was such a good tune. Let me go back.
There are works of art that I really treasure, or at least respect or admire, where the ending is not great, but I come to peace with it, because I'm like, you know what? That's more for them than it was for me. Like, I feel like we were just talking, not just, but when we talked about Cohen Cambria, like, I think we both agreed that the end of the Bag Online Adventures, that final track, is such a letdown. They're like, hail, hail.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then into the final cut, which they were so in love with. And I'm like, I don't think anyone else loves the final cut as much as Cohen Cambria does. but honestly, and like, I remember hearing, I've already said this on the pod, but someone going, you know what? They love Pink Floyd. This is them wanting to be Pink Floyd. Let them be Pink Floyd. That's fine. I'm like, you know, they've done enough to where they get this one. And The Departed by Martin Scorsese, right? Where it's like, I really love that film. And the ending is terrible. And I'm not talking about when Matt Damon gets shot by Mark Wahlberg. Spoilers for The Departed. But
I kind of enjoyed that moment where he has like his feet wrapped up and. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I love that. But it's the rat on the windowsill and then the capital or whatever right behind it. Like, I don't know anyone I've ever talked to that thinks that's a good ending. But I'm like, you know what? He's earned, I think, whatever the hell that is.
I haven't talked to anybody who thinks that The Departed is a bad film. So
that's right. Yeah, that didn't ruin it for anyone, maybe. So yeah. I don't even have to do that kind of gymnastics with this ending. I'm in. But I don't know. I think we have acquitted ourselves very well for the situation. Do you have anything else before we get to our third segment?
No. Baseball and take us away.
take us away.
You had to bring up how we're recording.
DJ Brute is happy to bring you a proper session of music listening at the beginning of every week on Twitch. With rotating themes showcasing new music, hits of the past, and specific genres, there is most definitely something for everyone to enjoy. Tune in every Monday from 5 to 8 p.m. Pacific Time as he broadcasts nothing but musical goodness live from the comfort of his home to the comfort of yours. Bedroom Radio, where there are no Monday blues, just Monday vibes. What happens when you get a bunch of obsessive music lovers sitting around a table and talking about every aspect in music? You get the Untitled Mixtape. Join Dango, Lewis, and Lorenzo in this educational but enjoyable podcast that encourages everyone to branch out and expand what they listen to. From deep dives to letting you know what is a bop or flop, the Untitled Mixtape boys are sure to take care of your music needs every Wednesday on your favorite podcast platform. The Untitled Mixtape, a Bassblown Entertainment podcast.
All right. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back. We have to do ratings.
I'm not even going to ask anymore where I'm at with ratings. I'm just going to go with my heart. And if someone calls me out later, which of course they would, because I know they would.
Our emails are full. Yeah.
If I'm over rating one song versus another and they go, how did you get that song this when you gave that song this? I'm like, you know what? That's just the way it goes. I don't know what to tell you. I do not remember. So I'm only
your rating is like D'Angelo singing on a song.
That's right. It's just gonna be what it's gonna be. Exactly. Yeah. I think because I chose it, I'll go first just to get us in here and then you can decide to overcut or undercut me.
I have a number.
Okay. I'm at a 98. It's out of 100, everyone. I'm at a 98. I think it's the highest I've given so far.
I mean, check your email right now. I just sent you one. That's your highest.
I know. And here's the thing. And I can explain some of that where, like, of course, we've done some for these song spotlights. We've done like really important songwriters, but I don't think I've done one of these song spotlights of like a songwriter I really admire Bob Dylan, for example, which I'm pretty sure I gave a 95. No. Did I even give a 90 for him? I think I did. Maybe.
Ooh, it might have been an 85. I think it was an 85.
Well, because here's the thing. Like a Rolling Stone is not my favorite Dylan song. Like, by a wide stretch. And not one I considered to be, like, in his top 10. Like, I don't know. Like, that's where, to me, rarely have we done one of these song spotlights where I think it represents, like, what that songwriter does at the highest level that they can do it. And I will say, I don't think there's other songs of D'Angelo's I like. I honestly, I haven't had one bad thing to say about this whole song. The song rips, man. I don't know. I just love it.
The song's incredible. Honestly, my number was 90. Yeah. Now, so this is difficult because I do recall some of my previous ratings. Mm-hmm. I still think My Girl's a better song.
I was about to ask you about My Girl. I disagree. Well, clearly I do.
Clearly.
Here's, can I be honest about something else, though? If you had gone first with 90, I don't think I would have done a 98.
No, I think that we both are answering completely from the heart. I think this song just rips beginning to end. It's got the incredible looseness. The lyrics are not phenomenal, but based off of what they're trying to accomplish, they are phenomenal. You know, the instrumentation is second to none to me. Like, this is such cool looseness. You can't help but be impressed by the song. And on top of that, this song being so stifled by a music video and really unfortunately stifling the rest of his discography, I'm going like, hey, everybody, I give this a 90. Get ready for 95s, 97s, 98s. He has such a great collection of music that everybody needs to appreciate D'Angelo a lot more.
And maybe that's the best thing that this episode can do. Like, if you're someone who has never, like, either been like, who, that guy? Like, or, you know, and which honestly, I was that for a long time. Like, I think if you're of a certain community or certain kind of music listener, you get little blips, right? Of like, honestly, a lot of like more contemporary R&B has passed me by. And the most R&B I listened to was when I was younger and MTV was more of a thing, right? And there was more of a mainstream, a single trunk of mainstream music that everybody got music from. The internet just blew that up. And I only would push back to say, I want to just reaffirm what I said before. I find these lyrics masterful and in a way that, like, I don't know, the ease in which they seem like they come out and the fact that you could guess, is he just riffing? And yet, to me, when I look at them on paper, I think there's such cool stuff. But my kind of final thing here before we get to your song that we're going to do is who is like going to try to fill the space of D'Angelo? Because there's one name I thought of that I think a lot of younger people would like kind of jump at originally, which is Frank Ocean.
And I don't know what Frank Ocean, not who I would have chosen. I think Frank Ocean is actually really good.
I appreciate Frank Ocean. I don't think they're in the same atmosphere though.
That, like, honestly, when I think of this song and a more recent artist, I guess more recent, I would think Childish Gambino.
Okay. Interesting. Maybe the last album he did. Well, not the last.
Well, when he did, what's the song? Something Bone. Redbone.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, actually, is Redbone.
Yeah, I'm already like, he's kind of somewhere in there, in that pocket, in that vein of a song like this.
I agree that I think him, I do think Frank Ocean, like, they are working on the same blueprints as D'Angelo, which of course is like in the prints and all the, like, you know,
all Sam Cooke, like,
like there's a deeper tradition there. But I, this is like, again, like old man on the hill, I just don't know who's got it in them. like male, I'll be more specific, like male R&B arts specific, like I just don't know. I think that's one of those, weirdly, I think a lot of rappers now are becoming R&B singers. Does that make sense? Like, that feels like it's working in like a content, like mainstream music kind of way. Like, when I hear Kendrick Lamar singing on GNX, I'm like, no, man, that's not it. Please stop. Like, I didn't like GNX.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
I don't want him to do that anymore. Stop it.
But yeah, overall, I mean, I don't need somebody to come in and fill the shoes for D'Angelo. The shoes already been filled.
And that's maybe a great way to end it is, like, there are people where, like, what makes their passing so sad other than just, like, the loss of a life is, like, there's just a singular space. Like, I thought about it when Tony Bourdain died. I was like, no one's going to be that ever again. And I think D'Angelo's, like, one of those where I'm like, wow, that's truly, truly never going to get that again. That's sad.
Yeah.
And, well, shit.
And here we are on my so I dropped hints.
You did?
I did. I tried to bring it back.
During this conversation, you were dropping his. If you're unfamiliar, everybody, I try to guess now. It's Rob's turn to bring in a song. I have in the past tried to scatter hints of what song I chose during our discussion. We both tried to do that. It's very hard to do, and I am so lost. I have nothing. I got nothing. Can you give me can you give me a snippet of one of those hits?
I can. This is a lot more difficult for me because I am on my phone, which is usually when Colt and I record this, I usually use my phone as my laptop. So I can't do that right now. This might be easy for you. Let's go with, you got the look, but do you have the touch?
Look, but do you have the touch? I don't got it.
All right. I really struggled with this one because I was like, I want to switch it up. I think you brought up how eclectic we have been. So this is a genre we have not really touched upon. I don't think we have at all.
Okay.
All right. So, at one point in time, I said certain musicians, you know, that don't impress me much.
Oh, interesting.
I think you got it.
Shania Twain?
We are doing Shania Twain.
Oh, my goodness.
Don't impress me much.
Oh, my goodness. I honest question. Did she write that song?
She did write that song. That's exactly why I honestly, before we had a very hectic moment there, I was just on a 90s country pop kick.
And that's like, I would say more than any other genre of music, I think we both have this in common. That's kind of like our origin story. It is for me, at least. Like, most of the music I listened to when I was younger, like, happened
there was
to
a
be,
lot of it.
Like, was it GAC, Great American Country?
Yep. Which, I mean, like, I can't say that's entirely my story, but, like, that's probably my favorite era of corny ass music. There were so many songs I listened to today where I was like, oh, maybe this one. But I just felt like Shania Twain, actually, she had a big moment to where I wanted to choose a song that, you know, like, stands on its own. That song reached number one. She wrote it. So I was like, all right, let's kind of break it down. I should have used the – oh, man, I just remembered the hints I wanted to use. Damn it. The hints I was going to use was – and at one point in time, I said Rocket Scientist, freaking Brad Pitt.
This feels like, I feel like we've done at least one other song that mentioned Brad Pitt. You have written a song about Brad Pitt.
Yes, so did you. Yeah, I'm gonna lump you in on that as well.
I didn't. I mean, I was there in the room.
You helped. I'm gonna give you co-writing credit to that.
So, songwriters Shania Twain and Robert John Mutt Ling. This is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So let's. Let's do it, man.
We've never done this genre, so it'll be fun. And it's so corny, but it lives in corniness that I think we can kind of pardon the corny aspect to it.
Hey, you know what? We're in it, man. We're in.
Saying corny that many times is super corny. So there you go.
Don't matter, everybody. You know what? I've missed your face during this recording, but I also
me too.
It is really our, like, the core of our friendship for much longer than this podcast has been going on has been very late phone calls that have gone on for a long time. And most of that call, if it's not about sports or baseball or something, it's about music.
Yeah.
This is,
and you're welcome, everybody. We didn't really talk about sports.
There's so much to talk about.
There is a lot to talk about.
So much.
We'll see you guys next episode.
Oh my God. Real quick, I think Roki should go back to the bullpen. I don't think he doesn't have a third pitch.
We'll talk to you guys soon.
I'm stopping recording.